Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Pod and the Pendulum, the horror movie podcast that covers all of the franchises, one movie and one episode at a time. As usual, I'm your host, Mike Snoonian, and I'm joined today by Miss Hellraiser herself, Ariel Powershop. Ariel, how are we this evening?
Hi, I'm doing great. I just came through a giant portal in the wall. Don't know where it came from, but we're going to find out.
Your setup looks new.
Yeah, it actually is.
So I'm thinking like you just
this poster is covering the portal to the ghost dimension.
Excellent. So when we're done, you're just going to crawl right
just pop back in there. Yep.
Into like a little garage somewhere.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, we are here today to talk the sixth and the supposed to be final movie in the Paranormal Activity series, The Ghost Dimension, where this time they've warned us you will see the activity, which
we saw something. Yes.
So, Ariel, I'll ask, like, let's give our initial thoughts on this one. And listeners, I know that we're known for going long and going deep. This one, you might be able to, like, you know, you might actually, if you have like some brief errands to run, like this might be a quickie.
Yeah. You can just throw this on your commute. No.
What's your initial thought? Like, where are we at this point?
Okay. So when I first saw this movie, it was when I was doing my Blu-ray box set watch through some years ago. And, you know, we talked on the fourth movie about how that one's kind of a little repetitive slump. And I didn't get to be on the Marked Ones episode with you and Devon, but like that one has some disappointments in it too. So going into the sixth one, I was kind of like, where are we going with this? And at the time, it was the last one. Next of Kin hadn't come out yet. And I remember liking this one a lot the first time I saw it. And I don't really remember why. I think maybe just because it goes for broke so hard. I was just like ready for that after the last two movies and watching them in like rapid succession. But when I rewatched it for this conversation, I was like, what did I really love about this? And it's not like there's nothing to like or we're going to, you know, shit all over it the whole time. But it's just sort of like, it's like partly a big old nothing burger and then partly way too much. And I'm just kind of like, what are you doing in this franchise that has made such good use of like subtlety and less is more? And then suddenly here we are with Ghost Dimension. And where are the ghosts? And what's the dimension? And yeah.
I think I know what it is that you like. I'm going to posit something right now.
Okay, I'm excited.
I'm going to say that Chris J. Murray, who plays Ryan, bears more than a passing resemblance to Josh Stewart, who plays Arkin in The Collector and The Collection. And I think every time that you're seeing Ryan on screen, subliminally you're thinking of Arkin.
Hold on, I'm Googling this okay. In real time.
So go What's ahead the guy's and name? Do that. You're thinking of, look up The Collector, look at Josh
yeah.
Stewart.
Oh, Arkin. I know what Arkin looks like, but...
Okay, look at Chris J. Murray or in as Ryan J. Fleege. They look...
Okay, you are not wrong.
Yeah. So I think that there is more than a little... I think every time you're seeing Ryan...
I'm thinking Arkin, and I'm thinking about how much I love The Collector. Maybe.
I think that's what it might be.
Oh,
and you're
maybe.
Just so maybe that's what's going on here.
I do love The Collector.
This was a first-time watch for me. Like, okay. I bought that six disc box set. I think it was like $10 for all the Blu-rays. And I just told you off air. So listeners, I don't know if it's still the case, but if you're listening to this the day it drops and we should still be in the month of April, if you go to the Apple store, you should be able to buy all seven Paranormal Activity movies and the documentary as a bundle for like $9.99. So I did that because I needed a next of kin. And I figured, hey, why not just buy all of them for less money than it would cost, you know, to buy next of kin on its own for $15, even though I already own six of them on Blu-ray. Why not? What a value. What a bargain. But even though I already owned all the Blu-rays, I never watched this one. Like, I would get to part four. I would watch part one, love it. Watch part two, love it. Watch part three, this is my jam. Watch part four and get vague flashbacks to how I felt about Book of Shadows, which is not a good feeling. And then just not even want to continue. So yeah. Arced Once was the first time watch, and this was the first time watch. And the general vibe I get is that no one's heart is really into making this movie.
Yeah. I totally feel that with you. Yes. Yeah.
It just had that feeling like, we know we have to make one. We know we have to wrap it up. We're going to tell everyone it's the last one. Let's get this series over with so we can either move on to new things or move in a new direction. Mm-hmm. And there are definitely some things to enjoy about it and to appreciate about it. Given the reputation of this movie, that and it's a pretty poor reputation, I had more fun with it than I thought I would, but it's definitely near the bottom of the list. I just think by part four, I just got burned out on this franchise.
Like, yeah.
It just ran out of steam. Marked Ones definitely had a lot of moments I really enjoyed, but that last act and how that movie ends is just so poor.
Yeah.
You know, you can listen to our episode on that. The draw of this movie being like, this time you'll see the activity, it simply means that, like, we're going to add some really dodgy CGI.
Yes.
And a demon that looks like something out of like a PS3 horror game. It's not great.
It's like skeleton ghost face 3D coming at you. Yeah. And I mean, I'm like, we have seen the activity. We saw Dennis's back turn into the letter C. Like, we've seen activity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We see, yeah. And we see that happen again, and we'll talk about that when we talk about this movie. Like, we see poor Dennis, everybody's favorite stepdad. We see that again. So, yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the background of this one, how it got made. And Ariel, do you want to kick things off?
Sure thing. I read, maybe it was a Letterboxd review or something, but someone was like, this is what happened when they try to do one without Christopher Landon. And I was like, oh,
yeah,
maybe. So this movie came out in 2015, October 23rd. If it's October, it must be Paranormal Activity. But the release date got pushed around a few times, like the previous films. So it was originally slated for 2013. And it was promoted as the final film in the series, as we mentioned. But then, as you listeners know, we have Next of Kin to talk about as well. And Mike, I think you put a note here that this was supposed to be the fifth one, but we got Marked Ones instead. Yeah.
Which I think would have made more sense.
Yeah.
I think it would have made more sense because then you could have wrapped up the whole Katie storyline.
Yep.
You know, with that. And then you
and
could
then
have
do
just,
Marked Ones.
Yeah. And then the Marked Ones, you could have removed all of, because that one was supposed to be a quote-unquote cousin to the original films. And then you could have, like, removed all of the awkward shoehorning at the end of that movie, where you, like, bring it back to that home, and you have, I think you would have had a much better ending. You could have still had like the midwives and all that and still tied them in. You could still have had Allie in it, but you could have been like, well, why are we time traveling back into Katie's house? Like, that doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Yeah.
But yeah, this was supposed to be where the Marked Ones was, and they got maybe a little bit gun shy about having like a fifth movie set in like a white suburban upper middle class home. Like, we had to change things up a bit.
And the Marked Ones feel so fresh that in some ways I'm like, oh, that makes sense. But then going into the ghost dimension, you're kind of like, and then we're back here again.
Yeah. I mean, because you have, if you did the Marked Ones, then Next of Kin, it's kind of like Andrew
doing an
Bourdain
anthology.
It's like Andrew Bourdain, like the touring the Paranormal Activity world.
Anthony Bourdain?
That's true, yes. Okay. My bad.
I was like, who's this person? I don't know. No,
his,
yeah.
Second cousin that isn't a chef. He's a amateur ghost hunter.
Oh, actually, I'd watch that show. So this movie was directed by Gregory Plotkin. This was his directorial debut. And it was written by Jason Harry Pagan, Andrew Deutschman, Adam Robitel, and Gavin Heffernan. Plotkin served as an editor for the second, third, and fourth films. And so much like we saw in the Saw franchise, people who had done other things on the production earlier, like Kevin Grutert being the editor for so many early films, then getting to direct one, they did that in this franchise too, although, I don't know, maybe Gregory Plotkin. I don't want to blame all this whole film on Gregory Plotkin, but didn't turn out as well as Saw 6.
A lot of people to blame this on.
Yeah.
Plotkin's interesting because his career goes all the way back to the late 80s. Like, he'd gotten his start on a movie called Warlords in 88, and he'd been doing, like, editing, like, he edited things like Weekend at Bernie's 2. He had served as one of the editors on that.
Okay.
But he'd worked with, like, on Pleasantville. He'd worked with Michael Mann on The Insider. He'd done things like Pay It Forward, Friday Night Lights. So he'd worked in a number of things and then, and you know, a number of like A-list movies. And then by like the 2010, he'd settled into a groove like working on, and he also had done World War Z. He had come on like as an uncredited editor as well to do some additional work. But he basically like started to edit like from Paranormal Activity 2, all of these movies. He also is the director of Hellfest,
which I love.
Is awesome. So he hasn't really directed much besides that. I think he did another movie called Crimson and some shorts.
Did he not direct Escape Room? Or was he a writer on that?
I don't know. I don't see Escape Room as part
of his... Oh, gosh, no. I'm thinking of Adam Robitel.
Yes.
Okay, yes, Gregory Plotkin. Yes, but, I'm with
you. Hellfest is awesome.
I really like Hellfest, and I love that you like Hellfest, because I feel like nobody's talking about it enough. Maybe this year we should do a Halloween special on Hellfest, because it rules.
We interviewed the writer way back when.
Like
way back, way, way, way back, Jerry and I, like in our first year. Because that movie rules. So it's not that he's a bad director. I just think maybe given the material.
There's just a lot here.
There's just so much you can do.
Yeah.
And this is a case where there's like, story by has like three credits to it. Screenplay has like four or five credits to it. Like, there's a lot of cooks in the kitchen. Christopher Landon, not involved in this one. Like you mentioned, like one of the Letterboxd reviews saying he had, I mean, by this time, like he's working on like Happy Death Day and prepping his work, other works at this point. Too many cooks in the kitchen.
That,
and like we said,
yeah,
that feeling like, okay, guys, let's wrap this up.
And like nobody's heart's really in it because there's so many visions to sort of try to parse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So the release. Oh, no, sorry. I was going to mention the cinematography. So the cinematographer was John Rutland, and he gave the actors, I'm not familiar with these cameras, but Sony PMW 200 camcorders for the first person in filming. And he built Sony camera to look like a large shoulder mount camera as a set piece to film specific scares. Like there are times in this movie where they're carrying around a big old hulking camera. And they use several Sony A7Ss for low light surveillance footage. So a found footage movie where they're using a bunch of different cameras for a bunch of different shots. You guys know how I feel about that. So the release. In July, Paramount announced that and it had struck a deal with AMC Entertainment and Cineplex to make Scout's Guide to the Zombie Apocalypse and Ghost Dimension available digitally 17 days after they dropped below 300 theaters as a part of a larger experiment. And they asked other theaters to join in. In return, Paramount would share an undisclosed portion of the proceeds of the VOD revenues. So they were like, hey, big theater chains, as we sort of drop off in theaters, 17 days after that, we're going to put this on VOD and give you some money. Would you like to be a part of this deal? So that meant Ghost Dimension only went out roughly to about 1,350 North American theaters when opening on October 23rd. And that's compared to 2,883 theaters for the last title and well north of 3,000 theaters for each of the previous three films. So it's releasing in way fewer films because not, or in way fewer theaters, because not every theater wanted to take part in this experiment, which makes sense. So according to early pre-release tracking, the film was pacing to open at 10 to 12 million in the US and Canada. Despite the fact that the film had the added benefit of 3D pricing, this movie was the first Paranormal Activity in 3D. And
which is super weird for a found footage movie.
Dude, yes. It doesn't make a dang bit of sense. So, and that's compared to 18.3 million for the marked ones. So, even though this movie's more expensive to go see, it's not making a ton of money, probably partly because it's not in very many theaters. It's in like half the theaters and people are kind of burned out. So Rob Moore, who was the vice chairman of Paramount, said, "There's no question that we're going to do less theatrically, but I believe we will make it up digitally. This is about the long-term health of the business. So there's not this long period of time when a consumer can't watch a movie." And, you know, this is pre-pandemic, when we had like lockdowns, when studios were releasing movies on VOD at the same time in theaters or instead of. And so, like, even with hindsight of that now, I'm curious, like, what do you think of that statement looking back on the last few years of streaming versus theaters?
So this is what happens when you have people that don't necessarily love movies running movie studios.
Yes.
This even predates, because right at this point, you would have had like Netflix being your giant. Mm-hmm. You would have had Amazon Prime and you would have had like Hulu. But even then, Hulu's known mostly for like for replaying TV shows. This predates Disney Plus. It predates HBO Max. Mm-hmm. It predates all of these other like niche streamers that are saying like, we're going to get all of this content and we're going to create content under this umbrella and attract subscribers. Like Peacock, Paramount, all of that fun stuff.
Oh yeah, that was years away.
Mm-hmm. So we're still in this model where people are thinking like, you pay to go to a theater, you get all your money theatrically, and then you would like either buy it on DVD, like even now, like with 4K and Blu-ray, DVD still, when people buy physical media, John Q Public still buys, in terms of like overall dollars, more DVDs than they do like Blu-ray or 4K.
Oh,
which
interesting.
Which blows my mind. Like, yeah, that absolutely. I didn't realize that till I read that recently either. Like that absolutely blows my mind. Like, why at this point? But again, like, we're kind of like super into movies and like want to pay for that extra upgrade.
That's
and want it on like the best format possible, where others are just like, eh, just give me, I just want to have the movie for whenever I want. It just doesn't make any sense. Like, why you would want to cut out your biggest revenue stream and piss off the theaters for maybe making some money. Like, when you look at what these movies make on video on demand, it's not like a ton. It doesn't really compare. It feels like a dump more than anything else. And what you're priming, it's that first shot across the bow. And we're going to talk about this, I think, a lot more next episode. We talk about Next Akin, when you have movies that are like, now you're pulling movies that were supposed to go into theaters and saying, no, we want to use this for our subscription model, which I don't know people that subscribe to a service because of like, oh, we're getting this original content on there. Like, you know, that just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
It devalues the brand, if anything.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends on the service. There's just so many now. It's so fractured that I'm sort of like, you know, I'm not going to pay for all of them. So I got to pick and choose the ones I want. And like, especially thinking about dumping this on VOD when they bothered to shoot it in 3D.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're not making, you pay for a 3D ticket at the theater, but you don't pay for a 3D ticket on VOD. Like, maybe the rental's a little bit more expensive, but it's not comparable. So I'm kind of just like, what did you do that for?
Yep. The only thing I can think is like, this is a sacrificial lamb.
This is the, we got to wrap it up.
Not really that per se, is that, and that they're thinking like, this movie is only going to cost us like $10 million to make. So it's not like a Mission Impossible movie where you have like hundreds of millions of dollars wrapped up in the production of it and then the marketing of it, where you can't really strong arm a theater. Mm-hmm. Like, if you tell AMC, we're going to go this route and we're going to like put it on video on demand very quickly, and the movie only costs $10 million and the theaters tell you to pound sand and you only play it in half the theaters you did than the previous installment, that's not going to be as much of a loss than if you did that for, say, like I said, Mission Impossible or one of the Scream movies or any other like big budget, huge, like a Fast and Furious movie.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't do that with one of those movies, because then you're going to lose like possibly $100 million to $200 million. And that you can't do. Where this one, you're still going to make money on it. I mean, even though this makes less than all of the other Paranormal Activity movies, it still makes back, like as we'll talk about in a minute, a pretty healthy amount over its budget.
I get that. Yeah, I get what you mean by sacrificial lamb.
So you're like saying, this is what we're going to do in the future, and this is the first movie we're going to do it with, preparing theaters for this eventuality.
Yeah, they were willing to burn this experiment, So in its opening weekend, the film grossed $8.1 million, finishing sixth at the box office. And as of November 15th, 2015, it had grossed $18.3 million in North America and $60.6 million in other territories for a worldwide total of $78.9 million against a budget of $10 million. So, yeah, they made back their budget, but it was making it the poorest performing film in the series. And it grossed $1.5 million in home sales.
Yeah. And I think the thing, too, like when you look at that $60 million in other territories, I don't think, when a movie does well, like in China or other territories, I don't think studios get the same percentage of a cut they do in the US. I think it's a lower percentage.
Yeah, I think you're right. So
like, they have to like do way, way better than they normally would to make the same amount of money.
Yeah.
And look at that home sale number. Like, that is, that's paltry.
Pennies. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if anybody has $1.5 million they want to give me, I'll take it. But I'll for a movie... it. No.
Yeah.
So it's not doing great, but I do have a few fun facts just to like have some more positive notes on this production of this film. So it's the first installment not to star Katie Featherstone, although Katie's mentioned often. And I could not find a citation, but this is mentioned on Wikipedia, and it's really fun if it's true. Industrial Light and Magic supposedly created the 3D visual effects, especially for the creation of the Toby Demon. I have no idea if that's true. So listeners, fact check it, tell us, because that would be a super fun fact.
Yeah, that'd be disappointing if it was them.
Yeah, well, that's kind of the thing, is I'm like, oh no, I hope they didn't. I could not find a citation for that. And I thought this one was fun too. So around the 51-minute mark, Ryan and Emily show Father Todd footage of a young Christy and Katie playing Bloody Mary, which was included in the trailers for Paranormal Activity 3, but it wasn't included in the film, and people were mad about that at the time. So the ghost dimension sort of retcons that by saying, oh, the girls played this game after they started their coven training. And I, you know, I love a good retcon. So...
Love a good retcon.
Yeah. Yes. So let's
talk about this movie.
Let's go.
Let's talk about this. And I think we should start where we have so often with this series, with the found footage test. The why are you filming?
Why indeed? I think each movie has gotten further away from believability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because why do you think for this particular one, it's like so far away from being believable?
There's not a reason to start. Like in the first two movies, they're like, we are filming Paranormal Activity and we're filming some family stuff. In the third movie, it starts as we're filming family stuff, but also I'm a videographer, so I'm going to film this weird stuff. In the fourth one, teenagers running across the street with their laptops, but we do believe that teenagers would be having Skype calls all the time, so we go with it. The marked ones, they don't really explain why they start filming other than he thinks, hey, cool, here's the camera, and it certainly doesn't make sense when they continue. So, like, by the time we've gotten to this one, I guess the only plausible reason to say they started is because it's Christmas time. And they're, like, filming their daughter, and they have family visiting. But even still, they're filming the most mundane stuff. And in 2015, I don't feel like that was the case. Yeah. Like, I was thinking about, especially during your conversation about the marked ones, I was thinking about myself as a teenager. And we did have a camcorder, and, like, we did film ourselves doing just stupid stunts, like rollerblading around and being idiots. But that was like, look at me do this trick on my roller skates. And then you'd fall down and you'd have that. In the ghost dimension, it's like, we're filming nothing, and then someone comes in the house, and then there starts to be some creepy stuff. But at that point, you think they would stop filming and run away. So this one just sort of like falls apart at the seams.
Yeah, they're filming things like the dad, Ryan, goes into Leela's tent. He's like, hey, I kind of want to have a conversation with you about why you were outside last night. It's like, well, why are you filming this conversation? Or, you know, like, just like I'm sitting on the couch using my iPad.
Right.
It's like, why are you filming these like absolute, or why are you filming the conversation with your wife about who sold you the house?
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
There's like nothing dynamic about this whatsoever. And there's no reason to be filming it. It's not like in the second one, you could chalk it up to like, well, there are security cameras.
So they never
that
stop.
Are set up.
Yeah. Right.
All throughout the house. So you're kind of capturing everything. And I think in the, like you said, in the fourth one, they have like this software that is always recording that's been installed. So you're kind of like always getting this footage. Marked ones, you have two dopey 18-year-old kids that are like recreating Jackass.
Yeah.
Like they're just doing everything. This is just like a man, grown man child who, for whatever reason, it's just like, in even instances where like, oh, my daughter is in danger, first let me pick up the camera and then like move it around and then like tell everybody to leave the home. It just like, it doesn't make a lick of sense. And even the reason the film to begin with, like he sees what most of us would imagine are just like dust mites.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Like that thing, he's like, I wonder what this weird thing is in the middle of my living room where I would look at that. Yeah. I'd be like, oh, those are like dust mites. And then I would move along with my day and never be bothered again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think, like I said about the fourth movie, I actually think I would enjoy this movie more if it was not found footage. Mm-hmm. And I say that as a found footage lover, just because I do like some of the story elements. They're kind of fun, but it being such implausible found footage really takes me out.
There's a moment in the next one where it feels like they drop the conceit for a minute.
Yeah.
Like at the very end of the movie.
I'm really mad about it, Mike, and we're going to talk about it.
Really?
Yeah. You're
talking about the end of the movie where it just starts going to different angles.
There's a very specific thing in Next of Kin. There's a specific moment where I just kind of went, I was exasperated near the end of the movie.
Okay. I think we're talking about.
Probably.
okay, so we'll definitely discuss that in a few days.
We'll get into it.
For I'm kind of like, I think they've just completely disregarded the conceit, and I'm not even mad about it at this point. Because what have we been saying?
Don't do it in the first place. Don't do it in the first place.
I kind of feel like, what have we been saying for like four movies now? Like, don't even make it, you know, at this point. You know what? I'm okay with it.
Okay. I'd rather have fun than not. So I'm trying to have fun with it.
Yeah. But just like the other thing too is like, hey, before every important conversation, let me make sure that I place the camera at just the right Dutch angle. You know, just
angled.
Like.
Yes. Yes.
And also like, why are you still filming?
Yep.
At what point do you stop filming? And maybe call a child psychologist.
Yeah, maybe when your daughter is literally in danger and endangering others. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's like, they're not filming it as if they're going, we need to show a doctor what's happening. They're filming it voyeuristically.
Yeah, for no reason.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? It's not even like he's showing this footage to his wife going,
look what you missed today.
Look what you missed. Yeah. He's just telling her. He's just describing.
And it's then like the recording of the descriptions of the conversations. I'm just like, what? What level? Yeah. What are we doing?
It's like show, don't tell. I mean, it's the first rule of, you know, like the moment where there is like this black goo following my daughter down the hallway. That's the moment where I'm like, let me show you this. And then maybe we should pack a bag and get the hell out of here.
This is the movie where leaving the house actually would matter.
Right.
And they almost do it. I mean, they do it for a little bit.
And then she walks 6 miles home.
Yeah.
Very pleased. You know, what 6-year-olds have
is a tremendous sense of direction.
Right.
Yes.
And the parents are like, we just fell asleep for like 2 minutes. And
she
our
had
daughter
walked 6 miles.
Right. So I believe that.
Yeah.
Yeah. At what point are you just like, we need to bring our daughter to see somebody?
Yeah.
Things aren't going well for her. What would have made this believable is if like it was a mommy blogger and they were like maybe exploiting their child.
Unfortunately, you know, that would be very believable.
Right. If they had done something like, oh, we bought this house. We know that it was like the site of this tragedy. Like if they knew when they bought it that like, oh, we know two girls disappeared from here and it's been rumored to be like strange comings and goings and we're going to, you know, they're going to grave encounters it.
Right.
Right. They're going to set up this kind of haunt and then it ends up backfiring on them. Like that would have been kind of like a really incredible way or could have been a really fun way to kind of engineer the haunt. Mm-hmm. Instead, you get like, oh, we're just a pair of like Bible thumpers.
Yeah.
We'll call a priest because I definitely want like an old priest around my young child alone. Super trustworthy.
Yeah, no problems there.
Definitely rub my child's forehead.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird.
Super weird. Okay. I think we have a disagreement over who's cutting this together.
Tell me why you don't buy the Toby is an amateur filmmaker premise.
He's incorporeal, so I think you need a body to kind of cut this footage together.
Okay. Is it not? So I'm trying to channel Devon right now.
Mm-hmm.
Toby Horcruxes himself out into different people who he uses to edit the footage?
Yeah.
I don't know, dude. I can't even make this work anymore.
Because you have like a whole team of midwives.
Yeah. And maybe they're the ones.
That's who I'm thinking.
Okay. Maybe the midwives. Right. That makes these movies make sense.
You know, I think the other theory is like these tapes are discovered later on by like the authorities or some sort of like detectives or investigators. And they're trying to cut together the most compelling footage for like the investigation or an eventual case to kind of put together what's going on here.
Yeah, I think that could be the case. I guess especially in this movie, because we do see so much activity, especially if they're trying to build a case against the parents or something. But yeah,
what case could there be? Because like they're both dead.
I don't know.
One's dead for 14 years in the past.
The timey-wimey elements of this do not make a damn bit of sense either.
No, we'll definitely get to that at the end here.
Yeah.
I made the note that, like, and we kind of mentioned this earlier on, after they attempted to broaden the scope of the series with the Marked Ones, like, not just by including like a different culture, by having like a Latino family and Latino friends and really a whole community of persons, but also showing that it wasn't just this one family of like Katie and Christy being targeted by Toby, but really like the midwives were targeting a number of women and trying to get their firstborn children.
Yeah.
And showing like how far and vast this whole thing was spreading. It's kind of amazing that after like one kind of like side quill, they're like, nope, we're going to quickly return to like a white upper middle class family in a sprawling suburban home after the Marked Ones did really well, but not quite as well as like parts like 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Yeah. Like what they thought was missing was this white McMansion family.
Yeah. Did you watch the alternate ending?
I don't think so.
So we'll definitely talk about it at the end, but they even like sneak in a quick line that made me chuckle where it's like, oh, cute little bungalow, like 5-bedroom house for a 3-person family. And that actually made me chuckle. It's like, yeah, like what the fuck is that all about?
5-bedroom house for a 3-person family. In what economy?
Yes. In this economy? It's just incredible. But it's not only that, but we're getting back to like the night one and like the stationary camera. We're getting like, okay, we tried something with all the handheld cameras and the Marked Ones. We don't feel that maybe audiences hit with it the way we wanted it to. So we're going to go back to like playing the hits essentially.
Yeah.
And I think it's really why I would have flip-flopped the two entries. And I almost wonder how I would have felt if, like, in watching these movies, if I flip-flopped them, if I would have felt maybe a little bit stronger on each one if I had done that.
I wonder if there's, like if some fan out there has, like, a good suggested order to watch these movies to get the best viewing experience.
Yeah. I know that there's allegedly for the first 3 movies, there's like a cut of them where it's kind of like your Godfather cut that takes all the movies and cuts them in chronological order.
Okay.
There's that for the first 3 movies.
That would be interesting. Yeah. I don't know if that would be the best way to watch those stories, but it would be really interesting.
Yeah. Hmm. What do you think of the decision to begin this movie by starting out with the end of the 3rd movie and going to that sequence where they like break poor Dennis's back and then have Katie and Christy like walk up the stairs?
I mean, it's telling us right away at the beginning, don't worry about the last 2 movies. It's reminding us of the first 3 movies that we loved and going, this is where we're picking back up. So on the one hand, I'm kind of like, okay, if we're going to throw back that far in the series, it's good to give people a reminder. But I'm also kind of like, I feel like we talked about in number 4, like trust your audience a little bit and have some reveals. Mm-hmm. Like maybe that could have been a way to do it. But this feels like previously on Paranormal Activity.
Yes. And also like you trust your audience, you show Katie and Christy because you go to immediately go to like what happened right after and like, oh, they're 4 years older. Like they aged 4 years just walking up the stairs.
Yeah, that's a good point, too.
It's just like you don't really it's like the asses are already in the seats. We already have your money. Mm-hmm. So we're just going to, it feels a little insulting.
Yeah, that's true.
Like you two are clearly, it's like what we didn't tell you ladies is that by when you're possessed, you're immediately going to age in dog years. Sorry about that.
The staircase does it. When you walk up the staircase, it ages you.
Sorry about that. So.
That's why all the midwives look so old.
Yeah. If they're not because they are old. It's just they're aging super quick. All right. Where do you want to go with this? Where do you want to?
Should we talk about struggling tonight, listeners?
Listeners,
should we talk about Uncle Mike?
Let's talk about Uncle Mike.
Yeah. So I don't know.
I feel like him. He should start a band with like Mika,
Daniel.
They could start like a trio.
Yeah, and the totally detached father from four, whose name I don't remember.
Who's just like, hey, computers, huh? Fucking wacky. See, I put him in a different category.
That's true. He's like a harmless idiot. He's
going through
a
divorce.
Yeah.
You know, his wife doesn't love him anymore. She only owns one shirt.
That's a lot.
He doesn't know when his kids' soccer games are. Like, he's going through a lot. Can't find the damn knife.
That's true.
He's going through a lot.
Uncle Mike is... Okay, in 2015, we should not have a character like Uncle Mike. Mike feels like a throwback to an earlier time where, you know, sexual misconduct was played as a hilarious joke.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow,
Eli Roth looks at this guy and he's like, ooh, you're a bit much.
Yeah. Yes. So I'm kind of like, can Uncle Mike leave Skylar alone for 30 seconds?
No, he can't.
He can't. Yeah.
He's straight out of Williamsburg with that mustache.
What's Williamsburg?
You know, like New York. Hipster.
Yeah. Okay. No, I'm not cool enough to know things.
I put in my notes like he's a consent violation waiting to happen.
Yes. Yes. He's like a walking PSA for what not to do.
Yeah, like when he opens the door, you just are kind of waiting for him to say, like, we're not within 1,000 feet of a school, are we? Because I'm not allowed to be here. If that's the case, I would have to go. I think at one point he says, like, fuck it, next time I'm just going to stay with mom. Like, oh, like, you're not, like, he's doing them a huge favor by, like, staying in their super nice house and eating their food and being like a total dipshit asshole.
And you have a note here, like, what is the point of Skylar's character?
Yeah.
I really just think to be harassed by Uncle Mike.
Mm-hmm.
Because she doesn't otherwise, you could remove her character from the movie and it doesn't change anything.
No.
It just gives Uncle Mike like a something to work against.
So I thought when they brought her in and she's like kind of like a guru, it sounds like. She's like a spiritualist.
She's like a cool witchy chick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it immediately made me think that either A, she was going to be like part of the coven and kind of like guiding things behind the scenes. You're going to find out she was in on it. They were going to do something interesting with her character, something where you would point to it and be like, oh, like she's pulling the strings here.
That would have been good.
Family, right?
That would have made sense.
Then I started to think, are there any horror movies about yoga? And there is. There's one that played at Telluride a few years ago. There is Mind, Body, Spirit, which is a found footage yoga movie.
Oh, I haven't heard of that.
It's pretty good. I would check it out. I forgot about it for a little bit. It's like a yoga, like YouTube yoga influencer who's like trying to record these videos, and it gets progressively more weird and disturbing as it goes on. It's called Mind, Body, Spirit.
That sounds awesome.
But I thought she would have Skylar would have more and more to do. It just also she's staying with the family for some reason.
Is she related? Is she a friend? I don't remember.
She just seems to be a family friend. you know, she just seems to be there to tempt the males, basically. I mean, that's really her whole role.
Okay.
Because she's like very lovely. Like her, her job is to be extremely pretty.
Yes. She's very pretty. She's very welcoming and charming. Like that's what she's in this movie to do. And she does it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's nothing she does in the movie, though, that like the mom couldn't have done.
Yeah. No, she's completely inconsequential.
No. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, why are you here? Except, like you said, to get hit on by Mike at one point. It's Mike, come on. Like you are. She's so far. At one point, she's like, I could use some wine. And he's like, oh, wine? And he's like, like he thinks that if she has like one glass of wine, all of a sudden it's going to turn to that scene from The Naked Gun where like Frank and Priscilla Presley like unzip their clothes and slip on body condoms. Like it's just going to take one glass of wine for that to happen. Like, I'm sorry, Mike. Like, she's so far out of here, especially with that dirty stash. Like, that is just not going to happen.
It's the breakup stash.
Oh, God, yeah. Like, is it a shock that he got dumped? Is it at all?
No.
It's kind of shocking that someone put up with this bullshit forever. Yes. Enough to move in with him long enough. So I think when we do our rankings episode, we'll do some side rankings. And they'll definitely be like the biggest like douchebags in the series.
I love that. We'll
We'll have to definitely rank them.
We should do that.
So what are your thoughts about this family? Like the core family, which is, you know, Ryan is the dad, Emily is your mom, and Leela as the little girl.
Yeah. I really don't have much of a reaction to the dad. I've apparently replaced him in my mind with Arkin.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's the guy holding the camera most of the time. Emily, I do like how Ryan and Emily, they seem to believe each other and be on each other's side. That's refreshing in these movies. Like, even though they're not maybe making the best decisions, they seem to be like on the same page about what's happening. I thought that was nice to see. Leela's a cute little kid. Of course, she's adorable. She's really good at being creepy when it's her time to be creepy. That actress is really good at that. But I'm just kind of like, throughout the movie, I was like, why is she special? Why does she matter? Why was she picked? And then we get some explanation about she was born at the same moment as Hunter.
On 665.
Right. That's
I can't
honestly,
even get that right.
I can't even fully remember the explanation because it didn't really make sense to me. But something about being born at the same moment as Hunter, but then also somehow Hunter is in 1992.
Yes.
And
Hunter
so
somehow
kinda
has traveled back to 1992.
So I'm okay with the family. They're a little bit bland. They're a little bit just there for the haunting to happen too.
Yeah, tapioca is definitely a flavor too, right?
I guess.
I do think that this movie does what the third one does, is that they work as a cohesive unit and that they try to help one another out.
Yes.
Like it's the first movie, you know, because part four, the parents are a non-entity.
Yeah.
Like when we talked about that movie, I think we talked a bit how in the background of that movie, we're watching like a marriage dissolve. And like the reason why a lot of the shit goes down is like mom and dad are so busy dealing with their own problems that like they're not even aware that there's a haunting going on. And you're like, have left it to the kids to like deal with all of it. And now here you have like Ryan and Emily at least trying to make sense of what's going on, even though to your point, they're not really doing a great job of it. Mm-hmm. And they have some cute moments together. Like you have that really cute moment where Emily's like, why don't you kind of like put down that camera, come upstairs and get some sex. And he's like, what?
That was cute. And then she like runs into the wall while she's trying to be sexy. That was very sweet.
Yeah. Like moments like that, I really, really appreciate. Mm-hmm. This movie, kind of like the third one, it kind of has a trope in horror that I really don't like. And I think maybe as a parent, I really hate it in that you have like Leela, who has like parents that really love her and care for her and don't seem to be outwardly doing anything too terrible. And she turns on them. Like, mm-hmm. this is Seth Rollins hitting John Moxley in the back with a, I'm sorry, hitting Roman Reigns in the back with a chair level of a heel turn. Like, this is the breakup of the Shield going on right now.
That's like, true. But then we get John Moxley's solo career and and we love it.
Kind of, but like, I don't know.
But you're right. It is a shocking heel turn.
She like has no feeling or regard for her parents whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And it's seems to come out of nowhere. Like there's no outward reason for yeah. it. There's nothing, no explanation for it. Up to and including the end when she sees Toby snap her mother's neck and her reaction is to be like, and Toby's naked as well. That's the other thing I could.
He's a grown naked of, like, man.
Like she seems pretty comfortable with like Toby.
Yeah.
Kind of like swinging dong in front of her.
Yes.
You know,
I also,
which I know I'm sure that. The actor is like covered.
I'm sure he has shorts on, but
you know,
yeah. In movie but world.
Like, in movie world, yeah. Toby is like hanging brain and she's like totally okay with it. Didn't, you know, didn't have to mention it, but had to mention that.
No, we had to. We had.
So he snaps her mother's neck and she's like totally cool with that.
Mm-hmm.
I hate that trope. I really, it's different from something like a movie like The Children where the kids are possessed and they turn on their parents. This is just full on, like, I hate you, mom and dad. And I'm going to go with this, like, and also she can see Toby, I guess, like, you know,
yeah.
he's ugly.
And like, we can see Toby at the end, but we could never see him before because he has a body now because something to do with Hunter and Leela.
I just had to give one drop of blood. It's like,
yeah, I don't.
You couldn't have given that at any point.
Right. And why did your mom have to die for that to happen? Yeah, she just does fully turn on her family. Like, she doesn't seem scared at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It just makes, it's the same thing as, like, at the end of, like, part three of Paranormal Activity, where, like, Dennis has been so good to Katie and Christy throughout all of these movies, out of that whole movie, and then they seemed like not care even a lick that like he's been bent in half.
Right.
Like, okay, whatever. And then they go on. Like, I kind of hate that.
Yeah.
This movie does answer the question, what happened to their mother? I guess she did get killed because they say in the videotapes, oh, she's never seen again. And they just start calling this other person mom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just, me trying to like piece this all together feels like the Julia Roberts with all the math flying around her head meme.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I feel.
It's not good. Like, it tries to answer questions. It just doesn't really.
Yeah.
It doesn't maybe answer them. I don't know. Would you rather a movie throw out a bunch of questions and never attempt to answer them? Or answer the questions, but do so poorly?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think probably the first one, because no answer is less unsatisfying than an unsatisfying answer to me. But it also probably depends on how much fun I'm having. Mm-hmm. Like, if a movie's just full on ridiculous and I'm having a great time with it, then I'm like, sure, give me garbage. But, you know, if it's something, a story I'm really invested in, I'd rather have open-ended questions than, like, half-assed responses, I think. Okay,
that makes sense. I don't necessarily always need answers to questions.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that when you set up a series like this, it feels like, oh, we'll get to it at some point. Don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't seem to know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And it doesn't feel like, with the Saw series, it felt like they had some sort of direction they knew they were heading in.
Yes.
At least for the first, like, after the first movie, with parts like 2 and 3, mm-hmm. and then after that with like part of the second trilogy. Mm-hmm. You know, like they might not have known what they were going to do from parts 2 through 7, but they would have like half the series mapped out at a time.
Yeah.
And they could make it all work. Mm-hmm. With this series, it doesn't ever feel like they know what they're going to do from one movie to the next.
Yeah, it's not cohesive necessarily. Yeah.
And then you just get like weird things that are entered in. Speaking of weird things, what are some of the things you think work? So we do like some things about this movie.
Yeah.
What were some of the creepy sequences that worked?
I actually really do like the idea of the old tapes interacting mm-hmm. with the present time.
Same.
That's really scary. And that I like when Leela sneezes and Christy says, "Bless you."
That's creepy.
Yeah, it's creepy. It gives me a chill. I really do like stories that do weird, not quite time travel, but like, mm-hmm. I don't know what it is, but like timey-wimey elements where they're playing with our sense of time and what's reality. Mm-hmm. I really do like that.
Yeah. I think that worked. I think mm-hmm. the stuff with, I think it is kind of convenient that the tapes end in 1992, which is just at the right age for Katie and Christy, the actresses that they have there.
Yeah.
Like, oh, like at the age they're at, like we weren't going to hire two other young girls to mm-hmm. play them when they're a little bit older. Certainly weren't going to do that. But I think that what you get there is pretty fascinating. I think it's Christy that they like, they really ignore Katie. And I think you see how this is really like Christie's kind of story to tell. It is creepy. Like when their reactions too, when they're mm-hmm. like, I think they're looking at our house right now.
Yeah.
And this is really weird and fucked up. I thought that was one of the better bits of the movie. I wish there was more of that. And I wish they had that tie in more ways as well. But when they were yeah. having that play out in real time, like that was super creepy. I would have loved to have seen how that would have played out with a crowd.
Yeah, that would be cool.
To hear an audience discover that in real time. Mm-hmm. I think that could have been pretty neat.
Yes. Yeah. I'm trying to think of other movies that do stuff. I know that there are, and I'm just not thinking of them, and I'll mm-hmm. think of 10 later. But there are other movies that have done a similar thing where they play with your sense of reality and
there's like the Stephen King books like Dolores Claiborne yep. and Matter Rose mm-hmm. where they have I think they have like the sequences where they can see each other at the other end of like the well
during the eclipse
kind of like tied into one another. I don't know if the movies do that.
I don't know either,
but I know the books do. Mm-hmm. I know, but so from a literary perspective, I know that's happened. I thought like another really good sequence was when Leela was reciting Bloody Mary backwards, like having that mirror image and doing that backwards. I thought that was pretty creepy.
Yes.
And then behind the mirror, like having like that ghostly hand pull back at the end. Mm-hmm. Then it just goes a step too far with it shattering. But before that, like that is like
that
walking
is really
in and
scary.
A little kid do that. Like that's creepy.
Yes. Yeah, I wouldn't want to walk in on that in my bathroom.
No, absolutely not. That would be a good gag to play in your partner. Just like do that out of nowhere.
Or grounds for divorce. One
Possibly.
Or the other.
I did think that like the whole idea of like gentle parenting, like that concept of like gentle parenting, it does go a little bit too far when there are no repercussions, when Leela sneaks out of her room in the middle of the night and tries to maybe burn the house down mm-hmm. by like lighting her mother's Bible on fire in the fireplace. And there's like seemingly no repercussions for that whatsoever.
I am thinking about how like, and so I'm not a parent. And so I'm like, oh, maybe it would be really hard to parent when you're really scared of your kid. But yeah, they definitely stop trying to parent her and deliver consequences. And also, this little girl doesn't ever play with a friend.
Nope.
She only ever hangs out with adults. And I mm-hmm. understand it's like holiday time. and family time. But I feel like kids that age that I know have so many activities and play dates and things.
Does she go to school?
No. Well,
she's six, so she's school age.
Are they on winter break?
They wouldn't be in winter break that early in December.
Okay. Yeah. They don't mention school, I don't think.
I wonder if they're like maybe those homeschoolers. We're going to, they're like super Bible-y. They're calling all these churches. They could be that type.
Yeah, she has a deep bench of priests she can call in a moment. She does. I was like, wouldn't know where to begin if I needed to call a priest.
Yeah, nope. She had them on Rolodex. Yeah. She had them on right on speed dial. And that and the priest right away is like, oh, yeah, your house is, it's demons. Mm-hmm. Comes in right away like, oh, yeah, totally. Totally demons, like no thought to like, hey, your child might be, you might want to go to a doctor.
Right.
You might want to talk to somebody. Has there been, you know, no sort of evaluation done. Just walks right in.
Demons.
Oh, demons right away. Your child is fooling with the devil, as we like to call it.
Next time I'm asked to solve a problem at work, I'm just going to say demons and walk away.
Yeah, that's it. Like, yeah. I think, you know, you've been congregating with Satan again. It's so old school priest right there.
Yes.
Like, not messing about.
No.
And again, like, never an attempt through all of this. Like, when she starts banging on the table, when she's up in the middle of the night playing the flute.
Yeah.
Just things like, I want you to leave your room right now. No, I'm fine. And she won't listen to her mom. Mm-hmm. Like, never an attempt to bring her in to talk to somebody and say, like, here's all the stuff going down right now. Don't love that.
No, they just film it.
Yeah, just, you know, which is why I think this would have worked if it was like, and maybe it's a little bit too early for like influencers, but I do think that like mummy bloggers, like that was a thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And like, hey, we're going for like some sort of like reality show fame. Like, you easily could have done something like that. And I think that would have worked.
Yeah.
When did Katie get a real estate license?
When did she have the time? She was a full-time student doing a side hustle making bead jewelry. Yeah, no, I had the same question.
And also, how did she... So she gave them a business card that had the legit number of the real estate company on it. So when they called it, they called the real estate company, but Katie answered. Yet they never heard of her before. So... Did spoofing? She like
you can spoof numbers, right? That's a scam you can do. I don't know how to do any of that.
That
seems like a lot of work.
Lot of work to do that.
Yeah.
Like, it just doesn't make a lick of sense. Like,
no, nope, it really doesn't. We haven't
heard of this person whatsoever. And it's a lot of work to put a person in a home for reasons that we don't understand. Like, we, aside from the birth date, we have no idea why Leela is special whatsoever.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a lot of work. Like, I think about buying a house, how many things I had to sign and how many rooms I had to sit in with my real estate agent. Mm-hmm. How did Katie get through all that? I mean, the title company would have to know. Yeah. It's okay. I don't have to.
I want to see a deleted scene. Where, like, Katie is walking them through, like, PMI.
Yeah.
And.
Yeah.
Just, you know, that would have been on there. Like, you will see the document signed. Oh, my goodness. You will see their credit scores get checked in real time. So all that goes down. How did you feel? Like, we get this reveal that there's this dude who's kind of pulling the strings for all the midwives. So I wanted to ask you, because I thought you might have some stakes. How did you feel about, you know, the first movie? It's just like Toby is this demon. He wants to possess Katie. Easy peasy, pretty simple to understand. Yep. No big backstory. By the third movie, we're introducing, okay, well, it's actually like a bunch of witches. and we're going to go with that for the next three movies, and we're going to build on that mythology. Mm-hmm. It's these, this coven of witches that are basically in cahoots with demons to offer up their offspring and offer them demons their bodies in exchange for like power and money and such. I'm like, okay, well, that seems like pretty fucked up, but whatever. It's mm-hmm. like bitches be shopping, you know, like whatever. Yeah. And now you find out it's this like ponytail dude who's pulling the strings for these ladies as well. Does that kind of lessen the impact? It's like, oh, just another evil white dude at the end of the day. Pull back the curtain far enough, and there's an evil white guy.
Look,
just
behind
pulling the
every
streets.
Successful coven of witches is a man with a ponytail. I've always said this. It might lessen it if I sort of still cared at this point.
Okay.
You know, at this point, I'm so like, what are we doing? Like, everything is so thin. Mm-hmm. With the coven that I'm kind of like, I did have a question of like, who is this Jamoke and what is he doing here? And why mm-hmm. are we suddenly introducing him? But I also was kind of like, eh.
Whatev.
Yeah. Which is not usually how I feel about movies.
Right.
As you know.
I think at this point you just feel beaten down.
A little bit, yeah.
I think maybe, like I said, worn down at the end, yeah. at the beginning of this episode, mm-hmm. and that's how I kind of feel like by the end of this movie.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the end of this movie.
It turns into a 3D action horror.
What do you think?
It doesn't feel... So every Paranormal Activity movie ends with a bunch of activity, but like running, screaming, dropping the camera, like things coming to a head. We're used to seeing that. But this time it's got a lot more like you see the ghosty ghost, you see the demon, they go through a portal thing. And it just feels like we've come so far from a young couple in a home trying to solve a problem. You know, like we've come mm-hmm. so far from that. So I think on its own, it's kind of fun. Like the end of this movie can be kind of fun action horror if you just want to have a good time with it. But I'm also like, are we even still in a Paranormal Activity movie?
Yeah. It doesn't feel like it. It feels yeah. like every other kind of generic, low budget horror movie that we've ever seen.
Yes.
You have like Mike and Ryan kind of playing hide and go seek, like they're literally trying to hide from Toby.
Yes.
Who is a demonic entity that can be anywhere at any point in time.
And they're like, I'll just crouch over here.
Yeah. And they're hiding from him like it's like Jason Voorhees mm-hmm. or a velociraptor in Jurassic Park.
Yes.
Which doesn't really make any sense whatsoever.
Yeah.
And like you said before, like if this would be like if any of the movies you were to be like, oh, we should just leave the house and get as far away from here as humanly possible. This is the one because yeah. like this is the one where like they're getting called to this specific location. This mm-hmm. is where they need to be in order for all this to go down. If they were to just even if that wasn't the case, like they have no idea about the like, well, it's a demon and it will come after you and you can't get away from
right.
it. Like, no, like leave the fucking house.
Right.
Just get the hell out. And then when they try to leave and they go to a hotel and they like lose track of their daughter 5 minutes after they get there mm-hmm. and you get the, you just get again, like a generic exorcism.
Yeah.
Or cleansing, yes. as yes. they call it. One note, make your exorcism circles larger. Like that's a tiny circle for yeah. five people.
That's true. You got to give yourself some space.
Yeah. You know, it's a big living room. You have mm-hmm. more than enough room.
Mm-hmm.
So you just get like this really generic ending where like the dad mm-hmm. is kind of, you know, you have like the exorcism goes down. They throw a bed sheet over it.
Mm-hmm.
It seems just really weird.
Yeah.
Like, how do we get rid of this demon that's haunted us for six movies? It's this all powerful killer entity, like throw a bed sheet on it that's been soaked in some holy water. Like that's all you needed to do?
Like you're putting a bird to bed in a bird cage.
Yeah. And of course it goes wrong. Of course it doesn't work. And then you get some like demon vomit and Skylar and Mike are no more.
Yeah.
And I guess that's like the only reason acid they're here.
Mm-hmm. Or something. Yeah.
As one does.
Get that checked out.
And then like Chris gets like a bad CGI arm through the chest.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have a portal that takes you back again to 1992 into the Katie and Christie's home.
Mm-hmm.
And again, cool idea, or cool visual, but like, why are we doing this? Like, I don't understand why we're going this route. It's not explained why it has to be back in this year. It doesn't make any sense. Why was Hunter brought back to 1992? Why is there a second kid?
Yeah.
You know, why were these two so important? And the whole thing was like, oh, it has to be the firstborn male. That was the thing.
That was
for
the
first four movies. You know, unless you're going to have like, I don't understand like why that was such a big deal. That gets completely disregarded here. Oh, we're just going to have this other young girl too.
Yeah.
We need her as well. It just doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't. And then we get the mom's neck snapped classic. Toby loves to snap a neck. Actually, Katie loves to snap a neck.
Mm-hmm.
But are they the same? I don't know.
I think that's Toby and Katie's body.
Yeah. Loves a good neck snap. And then he hangs Dong and then he walks away with Leela.
So if Toby is back in 1992. And he gets a human body in 1992, and he's a human.
Yep.
Wouldn't that mean that none of the events in the Paranormal Activity movies actually happen? Because why would they need to happen if he already is corporeal and has a human body?
Oh, my God.
Wouldn't it negate the whole series?
My brain just broke in half. It just cracked in half. This is Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure time travel mind fuckery. You forgot to wind your watch.
Yeah. Which is why it just makes no sense to have them travel back.
And
to
now
a time
Leela's
that's
back
like years
in 92
before.
As well.
Mm-hmm.
What's she going to do?
Probably play like Super NES and some Sega Genesis.
I mean, that's kind of fun, I guess.
Cartoons are better.
Yeah.
Dude. Early 90s are awesome.
Yes, that's true.
You had the like REM's Automatic for the People was out. This was the birth of grunge. Mm-hmm. I made my wife watch Singles the other night, like because I needed like a comfort movie. And my wife is from the UK and kind of missed the whole grunge movement.
Mm.
And I just kind of like walked her through all of it and she didn't get it. And she was like, how are all these people just living in one-bedroom apartments in Seattle and they all work in coffee shops? And I'm like, it was the 90s. You could do that.
It was the magical dream of the 90s.
Yeah.
Yes.
But the early 90s are incredible. Like Pearl Jam's 10 would have been out.
Hip-hop was excellent
There was
that
some
time.
Great hip-hop. Yep. Fugazi was releasing some killer records. I mean, we were just around the corner from like the punk rock revival. You know,
Michael Jordan, Chicago Bulls.
She could have been watching like the 90s Bulls. You're right.
Oh, my
like,
God. Lucky her.
Leela was in for a treat.
Yeah.
I would have much rather been Leela's age in the 90s. Like, would you rather be a 6-year-old in the 90s or a 6-year-old in 2016, right when Trump is about to get elected and all this bullshit we have?
No, I'd take being a 6-year-old in the 90s.
Yeah.
Which I was a 6-year-old in the 90s.
There you go. So.
Okay. Yeah. So now all of the previous movies didn't
happen. Negated.
And now I just go lie in the fetal position and contemplate that for a while.
Right. Because there's still like the unanswered question. Like at some point, like Katie and Christie kind of forget everything that happened to them.
Yes, they do.
Right. They're kind of like, brush it off as like, oh, this little thing that happened.
Mm-hmm.
They accept some other random woman as their mother and I guess completely forget their own mom. Yeah, it's just weird. It's just completely odd.
Yeah.
So I made a note. So I couldn't wrap my head around that. And listeners, if someone can explain it to us, please.
Yes, please.
Me.
I would love someone to explain this to me.
Even if someone says, well, Toby's going to walk back through the portal and then it's present day again, but he got his body in 1992.
Someone out there must have a red string board to help me understand.
Yeah.
And I need that.
We need that person.
Yes.
Okay. So a lot of the paranormal activities, like the first one famously has a bunch of different endings.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
There's the one where Katie slits her throat. There's the ones where she gets gunned down by the cops.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the one we get theatrically where she like has a demon face and lunges the camera.
Mm-hmm.
And I think like overall, that's the weakest of the three endings. The fourth marked ones has a different different endings where like the boys are in a church, like the exorcism works, they end up in a church and like they see it lit on fire from somewhere else. This one also had a different ending and it was filmed and it was far superior.
Okay.
It was way more ambiguous. It would have been kind of like a really ballsy and ambiguous note to end the series on. Like it would have been like a really courageous move. So in this one, the exorcism works and it cuts at the moment where it says, did it work? And they pick up Leela and they run out the door. Mike is alive. Skylar's alive. And it cuts to 4 months later. And the family is moving into their new home, which is Uncle Mike points out, it's a bungalow that's a 5-bedroom for 3 people. Mm-hmm. And as they're moving, and as they're still filming for some reason, you think okay. They would have learned their fucking lesson.
Yeah.
Chris lifts up like a box and it falls apart and a videotape falls out of it and they freak out like, holy shit, what's this tape? They pick it up and it's marked K and K and L bedroom.
Okay.
And they look at that. They're like, fuck this noise. And they smash it to pieces.
Okay.
They're like, nope, no more tapes. Fucking done with this. And then Leela yells, look, mommy, I'm with my new friends. And they look over and she's with Katie and Christy.
Oh, God.
In their yard. And you're like, what the fuck? And it cuts super quickly to a birthday party. And it's the mom and she's got a birthday cake. They bring it out. So they're in their backyard and it's a ton of people, all of these kids, all of these families. The mom is now very visibly pregnant. Everybody's happy. Everybody is smiling. And the dad is like, what did you wish for? And she's like, well, I'm not supposed to tell you. It won't come true, but I wish for a baby brother. And you're like, oh, that's really sweet. And the mom is like, oh, we don't know what we're going to have. Like, looks like an awesome backyard barbecue. And another guy enters the frame and it's the head of the coven.
Mm.
And he picks up Leela and he's like, oh, you're a big girl. How great. And everyone's like, happy birthday. And then it ends.
That is awesome.
Yeah. And you're like, did they like, what the fuck's going on here? Like,
yeah.
are they part of the coven? Did they get recruited into it? Like, were they just like, hey, we're going to accept you in, like, it's totally cool. You won't be, or are they just brainwashed?
Yeah. Or is the coven working their way in? Yeah.
Yeah.
That would have been exciting. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
So much better than like generic
next snap, walk away.
Yeah. Let the bodies hit the floor.
Yeah.
You know, it just like, it's again, it would have led to more questions, but like, the best kind of questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Those are fun open-ended questions.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like mind blown. Mm-hmm. I don't even need a sequel to that one.
Yeah.
That is the kind of thing that it's more fun to imagine what went on. And I just feel like every time this series could have done something exciting and fresh and challenging, they took a step back.
Yeah.
And we're like,
yes, like
how many millions will this cost us?
Yeah.
It almost feels like Jason Blum going, whoa, 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 whoa.
Yeah.
Wait a minute here.
Looking at his pile of money.
Yeah. If we do this, we'll, you know, like, how many budgets of Happy Death Day will this cost us? Looking over at Christopher Landon. We'll definitely talk about Blum in his relationship with this series in the next.
Yes.
Because when Next of Kin comes out, he has like nothing good to say about it. Mm-hmm. And really not a lot good to say about like the series as a whole at this point. And I do think a large part of it is because Next of Kin was like straight to video.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm not getting a huge cut out of this. Mm-hmm. Like, what's the point if that's, I just think that's how he operates.
Yep. He's a producer. So.
Yeah, he's a producer. It's his MO, which, hey, like, that's how he makes his money. Like, yep. I can't blame him.
And I like a lot of Blumhouse movies, so.
Not recently.
Well, yeah, that's true.
We should definitely, we'll tease it right now, because we'll tease it. It feels like I for a long time couldn't understand the vitriol that Blumhouse gets, mm-hmm. because they would put out movies like the first three Paranormal Activities I really like, mm-hmm. and they would do The Purge, and they would do Sinister, and they would do
Get Out,
Insidious, and then yeah, they would do like Get Out, and then they would do things like The Gift, which is really good. Mm-hmm. They would have like far more good than bad. Mm-hmm. But it feels like the past couple years, and they did like the Halloween reboot, and the first one.
I like the first one.
You know?
And I like Halloween Kills because it's just a fun
same.
Mess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Halloween Ends is a lot of fun to talk about.
That's true.
It's a lot of fun to talk about that. I don't like that movie per se, mm-hmm. but I love talking about that movie. Mm-hmm. And I love the conversations about that movie. But it feels like somewhere in the past few years, it's become things like, let's do Fantasy Island because that's an IP that people know.
Yeah.
Let's do Five Nights at Freddy's because that's an IP that people know. And the movies that he's doing, like Night Swim, Imaginary, he's gearing things towards like a way different crowd.
Yeah, definitely.
And it feels like he's moving away from Blumhouse in particular is just moving away from what worked. And now there's like the news that broke last week. This should appeal, you know, they're going to retool or kind of reimagine the Blair Witch Project. And they're going to do this with a number of Lionsgate properties. Like they're going to go through the Lionsgate vaults and reimagine mm-hmm. a number of their horror properties, which it feels very weird.
I am nervous.
Yeah.
I love the Blair Witch Project. I love a lot of Lionsgate movies. And I love a lot of remakes. And so mm-hmm. I'm like, could this be great? What's it going to be? I don't know. Is David Gordon Green attached? I don't know. Like, is it going to be Exorcist Believer? So, yeah, I mean, I'm a little bit nervous when they say they're going to touch some of my favorite stuff, mm-hmm. but I want to keep an open mind.
It feels like we're officially out of ideas.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, that's just what it feels like. Like we're just going to like raid someone else's vault, raid someone else's IP.
Yeah.
And that's true. We can do that. And I know that like, you know, Ben Rock has spoken against it. And he's Joshua Leonard has mm-hmm. come out and spoken against it. I believe that Eduardo Sanchez and Daniel Myrick have quietly said, like, no one's approached us and it's pretty disappointing.
They stay very classy. Like, they mm-hmm. don't talk shit, but they will say, like, yep, no one has asked us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to be fair, they didn't make the Blair Witch Project and then wanted to make like a lot of more Blair Witch projects.
Right.
Like they specifically turned down Blair Witch 2 because mm-hmm. they're like partly because like they wanted like Artisan wanted them to make one like right away. And they're like, no, let this breathe a little bit. Mm-hmm. But they also they wanted to make like romantic comedies. Like they weren't necessarily like we want to just make horror movies. Like they wanted to make other kinds of movies. And they never really got the opportunity to do that, which is pretty unfair. I mean, you make a movie that makes $250 million in your first shot and it's disregarded because of like, oh, it's seen as a gimmick. Like, well, it's a pretty goddamn creative gimmick.
Yeah.
Let's see. These are creative guys. What else can they do? You think they should be approached like to see like, what else do you have in the tank? Like, what could we do here? But that's probably not the route they're going to go.
No, I'm just going to be waiting on edge to see what happens with all that.
Can't be worse than Book of Shadows.
I think Book of Shadows is fun. It's kind of fun, Mike.
I'm not muted. I
don't kick me off your show. Don't kick me off.
I would never kick someone out. I would never do that. I can't.
I know you don't like that movie.
All right.
The Blair Witch Project series was like the first series I listened to on the Pod and the Pendulum because I was like, oh, yeah. Because I was like, oh, you know, my favorite movie. And so, like, when I found this podcast,
I did not know that.
When I found this podcast, I listened all the way through the Blair Witch Project first. And I was like, man, Mike hates Book Shadows.
I really do.
I know. It's silly. It's kind of fun.
It just made me angry.
Yeah. I mean, fair enough.
It seems to be getting a reevaluation of sorts. Like people are
coming around to it.
Not me.
That's okay.
I'm steadfast. Now, maybe there's a cut of it. Like maybe there's like allegedly a Berlinger cut and he wanted to do something much different with it. That would have been much better. Maybe. I don't know. Like, who am I to say? He's a fantastic documentarian.
He made those West Memphis 3 documentaries.
Yep. Mm-hmm. He did like he's done a number of, you know, phenomenal and influential and really important documentaries. But I think when you come into it, like offended that others made a movie in the style of like what you're used to or what you've done, that's not the best place to approach the material.
Yeah. It's not a healthy starting point.
No. All right. Well, on that note, as we have so little to say about Ghost Dimension that we're talking about Blair Witch Project.
Book of Shadows specifically.
One more thing. Saw 11 pushed back a year.
I know. Like, we got that news, and then the next day we got the Blair Witch remake news, and I just had an emotional roller coaster of a week.
So Tobin Bell is 81.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
They're rolling the dice there, pushing that thing back a year.
Yeah. We all need to manifest our
put him in that protective
energy.
Bubble.
Yeah, yeah. Roll that out for Mr. Bell.
So that's you know, like, I hope he looks in great shape and everything.
Yes.
But like, you know, that's like when my aunt, who's a little bit older, a couple years ago got a kitten. And I think I said, that's optimistic. But, you know, pushing that thing back a year.
I know.
You know, well, with AI, I guess you can have like Jigsaw forever.
I don't think that's good.
I don't think it would be either. But, well, Ari.
Well.
What do you have coming up?
Oh, my gosh. Have you guys heard I wrote a book?
What?
I know, I'd never talk about it. But really, that's the main thing for me right now. So you can add it to your want to read on Goodreads. You can read reviews of it on Goodreads if you want to see what other people think of it. You can pre-order a physical copy, an ebook, or an audiobook on encyclopocalypse.com. And if you know you're going to buy it, please pre-order it because that really helps me. If you're not sure if you're going to buy it, then you can disregard that message.
What is the name of said book? Let's say someone did.
Oh, my God. I didn't even say it.
What if someone didn't? What if this is the first time someone's ever heard this show and they did not know,
you know,
you wrote a book?
It can always be someone's first episode. So, yes, absolutely. My book is called Millennial Nasties, Analyzing a Decade of Brutal Horror Film Violence. And it is an analysis of English language horror from the 2000s. Mostly torture porn and torture porn adjacent films.
Oh, excellent.
Thank you for reminding me.
Yes. And that comes out September 17th.
Yes.
Is that the official release date?
Yes, it is.
Of the 2024, the year of our Lord. Not 1992.
And not
travel
2025
back in time.
Was Saw 11. So.
No. Now, it seems like you were timing it for the release of Saw 11.
It is the 20th anniversary of Saw this year.
Wow.
So
and no release of a new movie.
I know, but release of my book.
There you go.
So,
excellent. You go. Excellent. Well, listeners, you know me. You can follow me on Letterboxd at Mike Chump Change, but follow the show everywhere. Follow us over on Instagram at Pod and Pendulum. Follow us over on Twitter at Pod and Pend. And follow, go to our website, podandthependulum.com, which is where all of our back episodes are. We have like write-ups, show notes. You can leave us reviews there. Wherever you're listening to this show, I've been asking this a lot, and I'm going to continue to ask, please make sure that you are rating, reviewing, and subscribing to our show. Leave us a 5-star review, rate us, and leave a few kind words. It does help us out a lot. It helps us with the algorithm. And if you've really enjoyed what we're doing here, become a patron. Go to patreon.com/podandthependulum. And for as little as a couple bucks a month, you get a ton of bonus content. Brian and I just recorded and posted an episode where we compare and contrast Immaculate and the First Omen. I'm trying to get one of our co-hosts to talk Lisa Frankenstein later this month. I know in May, I definitely want to do Late Night with the Devil. I have an idea that I'm going to pitch to one of the co-hosts later on about a series we should do through the end of the year, specifically about a specific year in movies that's not necessarily horror related. So maybe some news there as well. But like, really, folks, like, we need some more patrons. You know, it's getting a little bit more expensive to do the show between like recording and promoting and hosting. So your patronage does go a long way to keeping the doors open and allowing us to continue to do the show. So if you can consider that, we would be very appreciative.
And remember, when we get to 50 patrons, we've promised to do Hellraiser.
Yeah.
And
we're so far away from that that it's...
But if you want us to do Hellraiser, dear listener, give us $2 a month and we'll be one person closer.
There you go. So patreon.com/podandthependulum. And we will be back next week. We'll be wrapping up our coverage of the Paranormal Activity series in the next couple weeks, where we do Next of Kin next week to wrap up the movies. Then we're going to do a ranking episode. Probably have a week off from doing movies. I'll probably want to do something a little bit different, like a shorter kind of like bonus episode, maybe like a what are we watching type of episode, just to give us one more week of preparation as we get into our next franchise, which will be Blade. So we're looking forward to that. Until then, I don't know. I got nothing. Got nothing at this point.
Don't get sucked into the ghost dimension.
That would be very good. Do not get sucked into the ghost dimension. Take care.